Hello there. Today is Wednesday, August 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, as the 2020 presidential campaign gets underway, growing concerns about more Russian interference in U.S. elections.
There's no question that Russia engaged that effort, that they continue to engage that effort. They continue to stoke dissent. They continue to try to engage Americans in hand-to-hand combat with one another over political issues.
Still recovering from last year's deadly hurricanes, Puerto Rico is bracing for impact. Also ahead, Lady Gaga, Ariana Grande, Miley Cyrus, and more will perform for a women's reproductive rights effort. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump's path to re-election next year seems to be getting more complicated. Trump continues to boast about a strong economy despite warnings from a number of economists that the economy, the U.S. may be headed for a recession in 2020, and the president must now fend off a primary challenge from within his own party, from conservative radio talk show host and former Congressman Joe Walsh. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the president's re-election prospects from Washington.
At the G7 summit in France, President Donald Trump charted a solitary path on trade, Russia, and combating climate change. Trump also defended what some see as his chaotic approach to dealing with China on trade.
The way I negotiate, it's done very well for me over the years, and it's doing even better for the country.
It should have been done by other people. It should have been done by Bush. It should have been done by Clinton. Double Bush. It should have been done. I'm doing it.
Trump often touts the strong U.S. economy on the campaign trail, as he did recently in the state of New Hampshire.
Even though we had fake witch hunts on our back and all the other things that we had to go through, we have taken this big, beautiful ship, and it's being turned around very quickly.
But the trade war with China is taking a toll, and some economists now warn of a recession next year that could possibly cripple Trump's re-election chances. Trump's Democratic rivals are targeting his handling of the economy, including current frontrunner Joe Biden.
It goes less to the underpinning of the economy than do a trade policy, a foreign policy, and a domestic policy that has people wondering in the markets how stable this administration is.
Trump also has a new challenger from within his own party, conservative talk show host and former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh.
I'm running because he's unfit. Somebody needs to step up, and there needs to be an alternative. The country is sick of this guy's tantrum. He's a child.
Walsh may turn out to be nothing more than an irritant, given Trump's overwhelming support from Republicans. But an economic downturn next year could spell political trouble for the president, says Susan Page.
In modern times, we have never expelled a president, never defeated for re-election a president who is presiding over a time of robust recovery, the kind of recovery the United States is in at this moment. But we also have never re-elected a president who is running for re-election at a time we're in a recession. So that is something the White House is quite aware of.
Trump generally gets high marks on the economy from voters, but a recent Associated Press poll found growing concerns about the president's character, says Steve Peoples.
There were some bright spots on the economy, you know, some policies, but that overall concerns about this president's character, the way he communicates, the way he tends to be divisive on some issues, really outweighs any benefit or that they're seeing from the economy.
And we are making America great again. Thank you, New Hampshire. Thank you.
For the moment, Trump appears to believe that firing up his political base remains his best hope of winning re-election next year. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, experts have already concluded that Russia interfered in the 2016 election in an effort to help Donald Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton. And it's a growing concern that cyber and technology experts that it will happen again and could be even more intensified as the 2020 election gets underway. Joining us more to talk more about that and these concerns is Jamil Jaffer, founder and executive director of the National Security Institute. So, how concerned should we be about Russia's continuing election interference?
It's very clear that Russia engaged in an active effort to undermine confidence of American voters, well, not just in our election system in 2016, but also in our entire political system, in our core branches that are at the core of the rule of law in our country, the FBI, the Justice Department, and the like. And so there's no question that Russia engaged that effort, that they continue to engage that effort. They continue to stoke dissent. They continue to try to engage Americans to engage in hand-to-hand combat with one another or political issues. And let's be honest, Lori, our political parties, both parties have not done a good job of responding to that. Instead of joining hands and recognizing the foreign enemy that we all confront, our political parties have gone at each other tooth and nail about election interference and about pretty much everything under the sun. Now, the problem starts at the top. The president hasn't made it easy. That's certainly true. You know, this is a time when the country should be coming together in a bipartisan way to address this foreign threat to our elections, to our electoral system, to our confidence in our government. We are just simply not doing that.
What other kinds of things could Russia be up to potentially interfere? Ransomware, or are we talking about some sort of tampering with voter lists or even votes themselves? And could it be to the point on a large enough scale that it could literally compromise the election's validity?
Russia could engage in a variety of activities. I think that we are unlikely to see actual vote manipulation, and there's a variety of reasons for that. One, I think everybody, including Russia, recognizes that engaging in actual manipulation of votes would be tantamount to an act of war, and the United States government would likely treat it as such. I think it would be very unlikely the U.S. wouldn't be forced to respond if actual votes were manipulated. Second, it's obviously very hard to do that at scale because we have a variety of election infrastructures. We have a variety of voting machines. Every state runs their own elections. They do them in a variety of ways. And you have to be fairly close into a machine to affect it. You know, you could get in the middle of the communications between the state board of elections and the machines themselves. But again, typically machines are counted at the county level and they roll up to the state level. And so there's a lot of reasons to think that the diversity of our infrastructure, how close you have to be to it, and the scale you'd have to do it to actually change an election, you know, it makes it very hard to do, not to mention the fact that it'll be viewed probably as an act of war. Now, short of that, I think certainly you'll see Russia do. Russia essentially has gotten away scot-free with having engaged in very obvious manipulation of the body politic through their messaging on Twitter and Facebook and the like. So they're likely to do at least that and probably push the envelope to see how much further they can go. There's the potential they can try to mess with voter databases so people have a harder time voting, although with provisional ballots, people still have the ability to go cast a ballot. It can be counted later. And I do think that you may see things like ransomware attacks. We've just seen reporting this Monday coming out of the Department of Homeland Security, which appears to be trying to very hard to get ahead of this issue. And Chris Krebs, the head of CISA, was out there talking about this. We see that the U.S. government is actually taking this threat seriously. So he's sort of ransomware. So what might happen is people to make money might try to hold voter databases hostage, right? Not because they're trying to manipulate elections, but because they figure, look, states have to do it and they have to pay the fee. So that's one thing you might see. And there's an active effort going on by DHS to work with states and provide them funding and training. So we'll see more of that. I think Congress could obviously pass more legislation to give states more money, loans and the like. So there are opportunities to do stuff. By the way, it's not just Russia, right? You could imagine a scenario in which other nation states that have cyber capabilities, countries like China, North Korea, Iran, who want to get involved and might have less constraints, frankly, than a nation like Russia or China, Iran, and North Korea, might have every reason to get involved, and that's something to be concerned about, too. So we should be on the lookout for that. Can't just be DHS. Got to be the intelligence community. Got to be Congress. Got to be looking at this. And frankly, you got to have leadership from the top. The White House has got to be serious about this and got to be looking at it, too. And, you know, given the president's position on these issues, that Russia may or may not have engaged in electoral manipulation when everybody knows they did, that's a problem also.
We have the Federal Election Commission, which is tasked with enforcing campaign finance laws, but they apparently have a minimum of 4 people that they need on that panel to be able to take any serious action. And we learned this week that one of them will be resigning, and it would be up to the president to put someone else in there. And given his lack of concern for election interference, how big of a deal is this?
Matthew Peterson's resignation from the FEC will make it harder for the FEC to do its job. I think there's some things they could do. Remember, the other piece of this is it's not just the FEC. There's also the Election Assistance Commission, which was put in place by the Help America Vote Act, which was put in place after the 2004 elections and the debacle of those elections. The EAC still the ability to help states out, and we've got DHS getting involved. So we've got organizations that are looking at the potential threats to our elections. It's not just the FEC. The intelligence community can and should be looking at these issues. But certainly the FEC not being at full strength does make it harder for us to enforce some of our domestic rules, at least. But at the end of the day, the real threat that we all see to our election, the one that we all recognize, or most of us recognize, is the threat from foreign nation states, primarily Russia. And the FEC has very little to do there. That's really a Justice Department thing. That's an intelligence community thing. That's about really making it clear to the Russians that if they do stuff again, that we will punish them and we will be seen to punish them. And that's about deterrence. It's about collective security. It's about the states coming together with the federal government, learning more about what the threats are, having visibility on what's happening in their systems, and having a real defensive capability, you know, joining hands and working together. We need to see more of that. There's not enough of that in cybersecurity generally. It really needs to happen with election security, and DHS is trying to do some of that. They can and should do more, and Congress should do more. Also help the states out with some funding to make sure that votes are auditable, and there's a paper backup for every ballot cast in this country in the 2020 elections.
All right, Jamil Jaffer, founder and executive director of the National Security Institute. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro says his country will accept aid from G7 countries to battle wildfires in the Amazon rainforest, but only if French President Emmanuel Macron retracts what Bolsonaro considers offensive remarks. Bolsonaro told reporters Tuesday that Macron accused him of being a liar, adding that Macron has to retract his comments and from there we can talk. Steve Barragona reports.
Fires burning across the Amazon release colossal amounts of carbon dioxide at a time when experts say the world needs those trees to absorb the planet-warming gas. NASA Earth scientist Doug Morton says the fires may get worse.
The region is only midway through the dry season, and so fires that are started today that do get out of control can burn for many weeks yet.
Morton says unlike wildfires burning in neighboring Bolivia, Brazil's fires bear the hallmarks of clearing for large-scale agriculture.
To get a towering smoke cloud that rises up into the upper atmosphere, you need to have a very intense hot fire, the kind of fire that happens when you light thousands of acres on fire at a time that have been cleared and dried in the hot sun.
Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro campaigned on opening up the rainforest to development. Nearly 160,000 fires have burned across the Brazilian Amazon this year. That's below records set in the mid-2000s when deforestation rates peaked. But it's 60% higher than last year, raising concerns that it signals a return to widespread deforestation. The G7, leading industrialized nations, pledged tens of millions of dollars to fight the fires. Bolsonaro questioned their motives.
Será que alguém ajuda alguém? A não ser uma pessoa pobre, né? Sem retorno? O que que tá de ouro da Amazônia? O que que eles querem lá há tanto tempo?
Bolsonaro and French President Emmanuel Macron have traded harsh words over the situation. Macron accused Bolsonaro of lying about environmental commitments. Bolsonaro says France wants to treat Brazil like a colony. Bolsonaro's comment on a Facebook meme insulting Macron's wife has intensified the spat.
C'est triste. C'est triste. Mais c'est triste d'abord pour lui et pour les Brésiliens. Et donc, moi, je pense que les femmes brésiliennes ont sans doute honte de dire ça de leur président. Je pense que les Brésiliens, qui sont un grand peuple, ont un peu honte de voir ces comportements et ils attendent, quand on est président, qu'on se comporte bien à l'égard des autres.
With fires continuing to burn, Bolsonaro says he will consider the G7's firefighting aid if Macron retracts what he calls insults. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Tropical storm Dorian is churning toward Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. In anticipation of the storm, Puerto Rico's governor is declaring a state of emergency for the U.S. territory, which was devastated in September of 2017 by Hurricanes Irma and Maria. Puerto Rico has struggled to recover from the 2017 hurricanes that killed about 3,000 people. Joining us to talk more about what to expect is Dennis Felchen, spokesman for the National Hurricane Center.
On the forecast track, that center is going to move across the northeastern Caribbean Sea and pass over or near western and central Puerto Rico on Wednesday, then move near or just east of the eastern Hispaniola Wednesday night, then move near or to the east of the Turks and Caicos and the southeastern Bahamas on Thursday night and Friday.
Is it expected to become a hurricane, or is it going to remain a tropical storm?
At this point, it's expected to remain just below hurricane strength, which would be 74 miles per hour as it approaches and goes over Puerto Rico. But that's just a difference of a couple miles per hour, and we don't want anybody being lulled into a false sense of security. 50, 60, 65, 70 mile per hour winds can do some very serious damage.
What are you expecting from this storm? Is it a slow mover, a fast mover, high winds, rain?
There's no such thing as just a tropical storm. The word just is not in the dictionary. And even though this may not reach the full classification of a hurricane, it will be at the very least strong a tropical storm. One of the impacts is going to be very heavy rainfall. Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic are looking at 4 to 6 inches of rain with isolated 8-inch amounts. And that kind of rainfall may cause some life-threatening flash floods. In addition, there'll be sustained tropical storm force winds with gusts to hurricane force. And that, of course, will create some damage as well.
I would imagine that those kinds of winds would also potentially knock down power and cause trees to fall, etc.
Absolutely. Trees and power lines would both come down in those kind of winds.
And Puerto Rico is still trying to recover from last hurricane season, so I would imagine that would probably make it even more challenging.
It is. I can't speak to the challenges that they have over there or what the power grid looks like, but there are a lot of blue tarps over there still, and a lot of cleanup is still happening, so this is not helping the situation at all.
Where are we in the hurricane season?
We have just entered the start of the peak of the season, which is mid-August through about late October. That's when you see the bulk of the hurricanes and the bulk of the major hurricanes as well. So the season has started off with a bang in May. We had a little lull in late July and early August, and all of a sudden it's like nature started to throw the switches again, and now we're staring at a storm named Dorian.
How long does the season typically go?
The typical hurricane season runs from June 1st through November 30th. We've had storms in every month outside of the season, but the bulk of them are between that six-month period.
Okay, so we are far from past the threats of more.
Oh, we have a long way to go yet.
All right, that is National Hurricane Center spokesman Dennis Feltgen. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Iran's president says the U.S. must lift sanctions before talks can happen. Will Congress admit a Cherokee Nation delegate? A decision will test tribal sovereignty and U.S. willingness to meet its treaty agreements. Dozens drown in the latest shipwreck off the Libyan coast. And intersex people have been recognized in the Kenya census. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. There are growing concerns that the heat and humidity at the Tokyo Olympics next summer may pose a danger to athletes. Earlier this month, a worker at an Olympic construction site in the city died from heat stroke. Across the country, a heat wave beginning late July killed at least 57 people. Organizers say they are taking measures to combat the potential hazards, as Henry Ridgewell reports from the Japanese capital.
Summer in Tokyo, with temperatures topping 35 degrees Celsius, clear skies, and humidity peaking above 80%. Conditions that pose a big danger at next year's Olympic Games, says George Havanith, an expert on the effects of temperature and climate on athletes.
When it gets warmer, of course, the skin gets warmer and doesn't lose that much heat to the environment, and the sweat evaporation still is then the main factor for cooling. Now, if we also push up the humidity as it would happen in Tokyo, that means that sweat evaporation gets even more difficult. So it gets more and more difficult to lose the heat.
Heat stroke is a big danger, especially for endurance events.
About 15% of athletes, even in a cool environment, have body temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius. Now, if we push the temperature higher and the cooling gets more of an issue, we get more and more athletes in that whole cohort going into these temperatures above 40 degrees Celsius, bringing them closer and closer to the level where we can expect an exertional heat stroke.
Tokyo hosted test events in recent weeks, including a mixed triathlon relay and a swimming marathon, among the endurance sports seen as posing some of the biggest dangers to athletes.
The sunlight was strong and the water temperature was high. When I joined the race, I worried I might suffer from heat stroke.
Games organizers have shifted the start times of several endurance events to begin early in the morning and say they are taking other measures to mitigate against the heat.
Such as increasing water supply points and cooling areas. I also hear they are deploying medical staff every 500 meters of the marathon course.
Havanith says additional measures may be needed.
Having ice baths available for the athletes to cool them down quickly if they have an exertional heat stroke is the advised method.
The last time Tokyo hosted the Olympics in 1964, the games were moved to October to avoid the summer heat. With a packed sports calendar and demands from global broadcasters, that's no longer possible. Scientists say it's vital athletes acclimatize themselves well in advance of the start of the Games in July 2020. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Tokyo.
And still ahead, why international students are looking at other places to study instead of the U.S., and what some very high-profile female musical artists are doing to protect women's health care. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed, voanews.com.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. In the past decade, the United States saw a steady rise in the number of international students who enrolled in colleges and universities here. But because of high tuition and fees, immigration concerns, divisive political talk, and perceived crime, international students are considering other options. Top competitors to the U.S. include Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and China. These countries are making it less expensive and more convenient for students. Zahar Majid has more in this report, narrated by Jim Bertel.
Foreign students are looking at other countries to pursue their education because of the extremely high costs for attending American universities, according to studies.
It is no secret that compared to other nations, the cost of higher education in the U.S. is significantly higher.
But high tuition is not the only factor. A study by the Institute for International Education points to perceived crime in the U.S. and divisive political rhetoric aimed at immigrants.
Actually, this has become my prime concern, as my background is of an Indonesian, an Asian, and a Muslim. Also, my appearance is different, so people can tell that I'm from outside America. It will be a challenging situation for me to adapt in the States, even though at first I thought it wasn't a problem, as I felt that America was open-minded.
Other countries, such as Canada, are seen by some as more welcoming. It has looked to attract students from China, India, Philippines, Vietnam, and Pakistan by granting visas that take only 3 weeks to process.
We have found that, based on our statistics, that these are the countries that are most interested in sending students to Canada.
And while having fewer international students than the U.S., those in Canada find their immigration pathways are paying off.
After my undergrad degree, I got a three-year open work permit, which is also called the post-grad work permit, and I applied for jobs. I got recruited in an accounting firm, and there I worked 1 year full-time, and which made me eligible to apply for permanent residence.
New Zealand, with 130,000 international students, is also beefing up its recruitment strategy.
The vast majority, about 50%, come from China and from India, but we also have, obviously, a big interest in finding students, the right students from South America, North America, and Europe, as well as the Middle East. Southeast Asia.
Despite this competition, some experts believe the U.S. can once again become the top choice for international students.
One of the fantastic things about the global higher education landscape is that any country can become a leading destination depending on the right factors. So the United States, for example, could become a leading destination once again and dominate for quite a while.
Chase adds that measures by universities, such as making international students feel more welcome through English language classes, networking, and student organizations, would help attract more foreign students. For Sahar Majid, Jim Bertel, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you're an optimist and tend to look at the bright side of life, a new study led by Boston University may have some good news for you. The study authors found evidence that suggests optimists indeed live longer. To reach their findings, the researchers analyzed data involving thousands of men and women that was gathered over a 30-year period. The study finds that most optimistic men and women, on average, had an 11 to 15% longer lifespan and had 50 to 70% greater odds of reaching 85 years old compared to those who were the least optimistic. So, it might be a good idea to take a clue from the comedy group Monty Python.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I can't believe the things you say. Right now I wish that you would try.
More than 100 musicians are planning to perform for women's health organization Planned Parenthood. Lady Gaga, Ariana Grande, John Legend, Miley Cyrus, and many others are signed up for the Bands Together, Bands Off campaign coming up in June, which is part of Planned Parenthood's Bands Off My Body campaign aimed at raising awareness about some states that are enacting restrictive reproductive rights legislation. Many of the musicians performing have been using their voices to speak out for women's health rights.
Before you lose me too, hurry up, hurry up, before I change my mind. Cause I'm gonna cry if you say you don't.
You have been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Cause I'm